John Simmons here with you on the new John Simmons Show, where we talk to people about their faith and what's going on in their life. You may have seen the title already. What should Christian marriage look like? That, of course, is going to be a topic on today's show, but there's going to be lots of topics. We're talking to Chris and Jamila, who I've not seen in a very long time. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, doing well.
Man, this is so exciting. I went to your guys' church 5, 6, 7 years ago. Man, it's been a minute since I seen y'all.
Yeah, I think right before we got married or right after. No, it was, I think, yeah, right before we got married. Yeah, like a year or so. Well, it's been a long time.
Yeah, so that's a good point to bring up. So we're going to talk about, I don't want to bring it up right now, but we're going to talk about Christian marriage. So I was around when y'all were courting and dating, and I remember all the stories that surrounded that. But now your marriage, now you've been deep, you're veterans, right? You're veterans of
yeah, I don't know about
of the marriage arena. You've probably done some battles, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you guys were such an instrumental blessing to me and my family's life as we were transitioning out of a church that we felt God had called us to. We spent a lot of time in, and then there was a rocky ending, and then God showed up at the right time with your dad and Pastor Stephen Smith, who are both near and dear to my heart for that season of my life that we spent with you guys. Such a tremendous blessing to learn from them, to sit in them, to be in a different environment than we'd ever been in. We'd never been in a small, tiny church. We'd never been in an African-American church. We'd like never done any of these things.
A lot of never.
Yeah, and so God was preparing me for what I now know is like I'm working at an African-American church. And like, it's like, you know, you don't see those lines getting crossed or dotted at the time, you know. Yeah. But you guys were instrumental in both making me remember that God loves everybody, especially like people who are hurt and broken, like, because like I got born again and I was like, oh my gosh, like Jesus loves me and I'm going to church and I'm doing things for Jesus. And then I have my heart crushed at the church I was at, church hurt, you know, that people experience from time to time. Yes. And I was welcomed into your family, your dad's church family, with just open arms. And you know, it's so funny because I don't know if you guys remember it. I thought I was going to end up at Stephen's church.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, because like the way that it went down, like Stephen's, I met your dad, who's a pastor at Glory to God Kingdom Fellowship Church, which is where you guys go. I met Stephen Smith when I was working at Lifeway Christian Bookstore.
Right.
And so that was right around the time we were trying to have a revival event at our old church. That all fell apart. I'm not going to share that story here. And Stephen was like, well, I have this Bible study or whatever. And we were supposed to do it at his old church. Do you remember this story?
Yeah, a little bit.
And so he was like, now I just met this guy like hours ago. He's like, we're having a Bible study. Come tell everybody what you're planning on doing, this revival thing or whatever. Yeah. Now he's asking a stranger to come share. Mm-hmm. And so he calls me like an hour before the thing's supposed to start. And he's like, my building's been condemned. And I was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, okay, fine. I guess I'm not going to this thing tonight. Right. He's going, no, we changed locations. And it ended up being a glory to God or whatever. And so, and that the first night I met y'all and I shared the story of what God was planning to do or what we were hoping to see God do in terms of revival and having this event in St. Louis. And your dad stood up and he said, I believe what you're saying, God, it's put something on your heart. We're going to partner with you and whatever that looks like. Many people who have watched anything we've done have seen the pictures of the event that we put on, you know, hundreds of people flooding into that Masonic lodge that we had this event in, you know what I'm saying? But that's like the introduction of how I got to know all you guys. Yeah. What was it like for you? So let me see. What was it like for y'all having this guy walking into my,
I thought at the time, I don't know how many years ago it was, but I thought initially, okay, I've never heard anybody talk quite like this before. I've heard people talk about, if I remember the number right, 10,000
souls. 20,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, 20,000. 20, we wanted to see 20,000 souls saved today, still believing for that.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. It was something that I'd never actually heard someone say a number so specific before.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay.
Is this guy crazy?
This guy's crazy, or this is directly from God, which typically there's a correlation between that interpretation of a person who's speaking on behalf of what God has showed them. It's supposed to sound like ludicrous talk to people who just don't, even to other believers, you know, it's hard to see it sometimes. But I got to know you and I was like, yeah, okay, John's the gent.
Yeah.
He's going to do it.
Yeah.
Still believing, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, God's done a number of things, but one of the things, so I'm looking at you because I'm thinking about how I was stretched in a major way to worship God, and you and your mom were at the center of that. Cause
me,
yeah, because you were help singing in the choir. You know what I'm saying? Get up, Jamila. We gotta sing this song. And you would get up. You would get up and you would start singing. And everybody would, you guys sang songs that everybody knew. You in your church knew.
Yeah.
You know, I came from a a background of my first church that I went to after I got born again had the words on the screen. Mm-hmm. The second church that I went to had the words in a book. Yeah. You know, and I get to y'all's church and y'all like, we got the words in our heart.
Yeah. Right. You know what I'm saying? Oh my gosh.
And that's what it felt like. I was like, this
not
is different.
Just that, mom, well, she's pastor now. She teaches in the middle. Well, she used to sometimes because she's an artist and she's very meticulous about the songs and, you know, worship unto God. And so sometimes if the harmony doesn't hit her spirit right, she'll like teach. I know you probably remember
yeah. Oh,
this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
she'll
yeah.
like teach the alto part or the soprano part in the middle so that we can all get on one accord in the song. And so I remember that. It's fun times.
Yeah. I remember her being like, y'all gotta sing. And I'd be like, well, sing what? Like, I don't know the words to this song. But it stretched us because even Megan, we were like, all right, cool. So after being there for a minute and you start hearing these songs repetitively, you know, mm-hmm. we're turning around and around and around and around. You know what I'm saying?
We still sing that song sometimes. Yeah.
And it got me ready for so many things in life, but I had never worshiped God like that. It really took me out of my comfort zone, not just to sing a song I never heard, because like, did you guys grow up in church your whole life?
For the most part.
Yeah.
Very heavily.
When I went to church as an adult at 29 years old for the first time, I had never heard of this. They sang three Chris Tomlin songs. I was like, who's Chris Tomlin? You know what I'm saying? He was like the most popular artist at the time.
Yeah.
And I didn't know any Christian songs, and so I had never worshipped God. And in fact, the first time they sang songs at church, I put my hands, like, dug them into the seat in front of me. Like, I didn't want to lift my hands up and worship God. I thought it was like, what are these crazy people doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, why is everybody... It felt so unusual. Yeah. Worship in general. And then you get in a situation where it's intimate,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which is what you guys had, this intimacy with God, where you guys are on one accord, singing together, trusting the God's in the room with you. Like, it was just in a different environment. Where does that stem from, you think?
You know, in Black church, it's kind of a thing that, I guess it's kind of, it's hard to logically articulate it because I grew up in church my whole life.
mm-hmm.
I'm talking Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday night Bible studies, prayer meetings, choir rehearsals, 4 or 5 days out of the week, you know, at church for one thing or another. And one thing that was always a part of every single service, every single meeting in some way, shape, or form was the music.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of songs that you heard coming to Christ as an adult, I've been hearing since before I knew English.
Yeah, that's real. Yeah.
I probably, you know, heard some hymns and heard some Dr. Watts and different things of that nature. And it grows up kind of being like cooking at home, you know, like riding in the car. It's just like a part.
Mm-hmm.
The upbringing and the culture of, you know, like Black churches and, you know, other churches that are, you know, the Fallen Baptists or Pentecostal mm-hmm. churches of that nature, it's kind of part of your identity. In a way.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
you can't help but be intimate in that kind of way, you know.
I agree, but I also feel like it's a feeling though too, because I feel like in churches similar to ours, a small intimate church, I feel like there's nowhere to hide. And our leadership talks about that a lot. There's nowhere to hide in the congregation. Like, either you want to be there and you want to worship God, or, you know, you're lost and you have questions, or, you know, it can mm-hmm. be a multiple things. And so I feel like that worship part of it, with experiences like yours, you have to like search within yourself, okay, like, I'm uncomfortable, but am I gonna find the ability, like the will, to still worship God even though I don't know this song, even though, you know, I don't know these words or the harmony part, which is quite often me.
Yeah.
But you just gotta make it work, because I feel like in your heart and how you feel, you want to worship God. Mm-hmm. And so you just do it.
I always felt bad for you and like some of the others, because she'd be like, y'all get up here. And you'd be like, I'd feel that shoulder shrug a little bit. And I'd be like, I get it. Don't ask me to come up there. I ain't ready to come up there yet. You know what I'm saying? And so you had to like participate in a way that I didn't. And so even for you guys, there was still this level of like uncomfortableness that you had to walk through a little bit in your worship.
Yeah.
So yeah, funny story about that. Since I was a kid, I've been doing music, involved in music, choirs, playing musicians. I played the drums when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And we were without a drummer at the church for quite some time.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually. Mm-hmm. A resonating theme in my life that I talk about in Bible studies and different services, my hard-headedness and how God has kind of used that to walk me into maturity by learning to break that. They had told me, they had a drum set that they had bought me, oh my goodness, probably 5-6 years before we formed the church. It was always in the basement. It sat in the garage and we had the church and we had a keyboardist and music and everything, but Chris would not play the drums.
Oh no.
Eventually, they were like, we're taking them to the church and they're going to be there. And I came to a service and I'm like, okay, I'll play. Just give me a couple Sundays to get ready. And the first Sunday the drums were in the church, they were like, get up there.
Pulling you out.
And I did. And I was uncomfortable as, I mean, you can probably imagine anybody would be because it had been a while. But what I learned in that moment and in the subsequent moments that followed, because I didn't learn my lesson the first time. Hard-headedness doesn't break after one time.
Yeah.
Is that if you're willing to step out there, regardless of what you know, God will fill in the blank.
Yeah.
He will make provision to make whatever needs to come out of you and whatever gifting, whatever anointing place that he's put you in, it's going to come forward.
Yeah.
All he needs is a yes.
Yeah.
All he needs is a willing person. Even if it takes good leadership to tell you stop being
so hard. You can see it. You know.
Get up there in that chair and those sticks up and play those drums. It's
It's interesting that you say that, and I would like to point this out to anybody who's like in a season where they're like, Am I at where I'm supposed to be at? Am I doing the thing that I'm not doing the thing I want to do. I'm doing the thing that I'm being asked to do and that sort of thing. Like, to me, when I showed up at your guys' church and you guys brought me in and loved on me so good, like at the time I felt like I'm taking a step backwards sort of in a way. Like I was at a bigger church, bigger building church, right? You know what I'm saying? Like it's and you know, I'd gotten this vision from God. Did I mess it up? Did I mess this whole thing up? You know, and I have like doubt, a lot of doubt in my heart about like the calling on my life. And but at the same time, and I can look back now 8 years later, right, and I can say, okay, well, Joseph had these issues too, you know, where like you felt like you're getting put in places where, like, I don't know if I this is where you really want me to go, God. You told me to go over here, but you have me over here,
right?
You know, but it prepped my heart and it put me in a place for so many reasons. I mean, really, like, you guys don't know the impact that y'all had on my life. Just, you know, it grew, it helped me mature in a way that I had never expected, you know, because it's one thing to like go to a church, feel called from God, show up with like a vision and a message. I had done that previous to meeting you guys. I had done the same 20,000 people in a day. I had shared that message with other people before, and you guys were the first one who was like, well, let's do it. You know, and so that, like, not only did it mature me to a point where I was like, oh, I actually have to do something now. Like, you know, like, maybe I've got to actually, you know, I've got to pray or do something. Right. I just keep saying this thing over and over again. The other thing was just like, it put me in alignment with walking out whatever the path looked like. And for me, like, I couldn't have predicted where the path would end me up, but the season that I had with you guys was so fulfilling to me. You know, spending time with you guys and going out and hanging out. We went to the bowling alley and we did different things, you know?
Yeah.
And like this was an early infancy, like when my kids were being born, like Maya was born, James was born while I was, you know, so like I'm bringing them an environment that we would have not predicted, you know what I'm saying? And it meant a lot to me that you all were just like, yeah, bring the kiddos and all, you know, it's like, and doing church without a kids church, you know?
Man.
Yeah.
That's a blessing to hear you to say.
Yeah.
That's a blessing. I always wanted to know, if we had loved on you enough and if we had been there for you all enough and supported you enough and welcomed you enough, you know, because I know sometimes that racial barrier can be a problem in churches. And so our leadership, they make it a point to, you know, every church isn't, you know, the same. Mm-hmm. And some churches don't, you know, make it a point to make that barrier, you know, not exist. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's something that our leadership really wants to harp on, and to, you know, because the kingdom is that way. The kingdom is diverse and vast mm-hmm. and beautiful, and all of the races and all the minds and all of the people, sizes, shapes, all of the stuff. And so that's a blessing to hear that you guys, or you, were able to.
Oh, Megan, get, I'm not gonna put words in her mouth, but she would say the same thing. We took her out of an environment where she grew up. She, opposite of me, she grew up in church her whole life, you know what I'm saying? But she'd only been to, you know, one type of church, yep. you know what I'm saying? And so she got to experience things similarly that she'd never experienced. Like, she'd put her hands in the air lots of times, you know what I'm saying? But she had never worshiped. Like, yeah. you just start singing. What? What? Like, that was a new environment for her, you know? And so yeah. we had such...
It can be intimidating, you know, too.
Of course it can. And it was.
Yes, it was. Yes.
But it's not that we were like, oh, they're not loving on us enough. You know, for us, my vision is always what's next, you know? And unfortunately, I keep moving on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't swim around in the same ponds too long, and that's not anything.
Nothing's
on
wrong with that.
Yeah,
as long as, like, God is leading you,
and that's what he was trying to do. I really feel like I was trying to navigate the waters that God had for me.
Yeah.
And as he took me from your church to another church and then to another church, mm-hmm. and then eventually he was like, go the weekend, the church I'm at now is called the Spirit Church. Mm-hmm. So it had previously been in off of Hanley or in Ferguson or something like that, and I'd heard of it, but I had never been or anything like that. The weekend it opened on the Rock Road, which is the area ministry that I've been believing for a long time, God was like, you need to go there. Mm-hmm. And so I walked in there the day they opened this big building. It's this old Toys R Us or whatever, and I'm like, and I'm looking around, I was like, hey, this is you know, hey, you know, let's be real around here. I was the only white guy, you know, and
oh, were you?
Oh, one of few, if any, you know what I'm saying? I think they had one and they put him on the platform to sing, you know what I'm saying? So it was, you know, I when I had heard of their church and I was like, oh, it's the pastor from the Rams or whatever, in my head I was like, oh, that's probably like a multicultural sort of deal. You know, I just never seen it, never, you know. And so, but I walk in and I was like, okay, it's me.
Like, oh,
we've expanded the search committee. They can come and find us and be right. like, oh, thanks for coming. What are you guys doing here? You know, and that's not to say, but and like, there are white people who go, and I'm trying not to be like too in a box, because the church is not like that. The church does not act in a certain way or do anything specifically, but you guys, in a big way, when they started singing those songs, I was like, I know these ones. I know these. This is my jam. Let's start doing the moves, baby. Oh, we're ready to go. You know what I'm saying?
That's hilarious.
It put me in a place that I had never been before, because like, I had been to the big non-denom churches that have been mostly white. You know what I'm saying? And I had even learned how to raise my hands in worship, but I walked in and I felt at home. Wow. At the Spirit Church. Because I had already experienced what that worship is like with y'all on a
That's
smaller
beautiful.
Scale. You know what I'm saying? And we spent 2 years on the front row there. And the whole time I'm like, God, you know, like, you called me here for what? You know, like, no one notices me. Even though I'm noticeable, I'm not being noticed, right? Like, no one's like, hey, what do you, you know, I'd met with the pastor a couple times in the you know, the line outside of the worship service and things like that. But nothing had ever moved. And that's another thing that you guys did at your church for me that was very a great part of my journey, was gave me the opportunity to share my story, share what God had put on my heart, whether it was a Bible study or a lesson or something that I had seen, or, you know, story. Like, we talked about Pat Williams. We'll talk about that later. Like, that was the first opportunity I got to speak, like, publicly, like, consistently at any sort, you know. And then I spent this long season where I wasn't talking at all, you know. And I was like, okay, well, we were doing the radio show, so it wasn't that I wasn't talking, but at church, like, I had no like church community, had no like discipleship, I wasn't having conversations, I was just going to church service. And mm-hmm. so I was sitting on this front row for a long time, and eventually we had this men's breakfast, and anyway, the short story is somebody heard me share my testimony at this men's breakfast, and they're like, you do radio and stuff, we need some help in the back with the cameras or whatever, you know. And I was like, can you do that? I was like, oh yeah, like, that's what I do, you know. Like, and so I end up volunteering in the back for like 3 years or something, and then somebody sees a video that I did, shares it with pastor, and pastor's like, he does videos, why doesn't he do videos for us, you know? And all of a sudden I'm on the staff, you know. And it, like, right. it happened so fast.
Yeah,
you know, I was in these seasons. And so now for the past 2 years, I worked there on the staff for 2 years, I've grown in my gifts, my talents, my community, my in all these different things. Yeah. And had I spent 2 years there without being comfortable, I would have never made it.
Yeah,
but I felt comfortable.
That's yeah. good,
you know. And you guys are at the center of why I felt comfortable, if that makes sense. Yeah. You know,
yeah,
King of Fellowship. Amen. Yeah, so you guys don't your dad used to say this, and I've heard other people say it a lot, but your dad would always say that and by the way, your dad is pastor of the church, so for anybody who can't follow along, you know.
Now overseer.
Oh, overseer, so okay.
And
okay.
Yeah.
So my mom is functioning as pastor, but they're co-leading. He's still kind
of. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. Okay, cool. But he would always say, don't despise small beginnings. Don't despise small beginnings, you know. And you're like, hey, that's a nice thing to say if it's small.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But it's like, I know that that's true.
Yes.
Because I know what comes out of those small meetings, those small groups, those small intimate gatherings, whether it's with people or whether it's with God.
Mm-hmm.
Strong things can come out of those situations. And what I've experienced here in my journey with Christ here in St. Louis, it's a direct reflection of what I learned from a lot from you and your family and the people who I spent time with at your church. So I think I need to share that. I didn't come in here expecting to share all that. but I'm glad great. I got to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad we could be a part
yeah.
of something like that, because you know, serving at a church that's small in number, that's the way we talk about it. But you know, God can do whatever with any number of people, you know, look at the Old Testament. But it's encouraging and refreshing to hear that, because you don't see a lot of new faces at smaller houses of worship. You know, typically at large churches, all kinds of people come in and out, and, you know, but to actually hear that, you know, you touch people, even if it's just one every 2-3 months, one every mm-hmm. couple of years, it does the heart good.
Yeah.
It's good to hear about that. Thank you.
I wanted to say, sorry, no, I won't keep us here long, but
it's all good.
I wanted to say, I saw a post within the last like 2 weeks or so, and it said it was two pictures, like one on top, one on the bottom, two frames. And one said something to the likes of, you can't be willing to go here in like one of the big churches and serve here, but unwilling to serve here in like a small church, or, you know, I can't remember exactly how it said it, but it was something to the likes of that. And, I can say that you were willing to serve at the small church. You are willing to serve at the bigger churches. And I think that's great. And I think more people need to, you know, be willing to look at themselves and be like, if this were like a smaller place, would I, you know, volunteer my time? Will I serve? Will I, you know, because a lot of people like to go straight to the big church and they have the name and they have all the stuff and serve there, but unwilling to serve at the, you know, small place where they are. So I don't know. I just
want. No, to I think that. You're absolutely right. It is, because it was a pride thing for me at first, because I was like, what's happening? Why does it look like it's broken? Even though in the moment, like when I got picked up by Stephen Smith and your dad, and you know, they were like, come with, and they give me a big old giant bear hug.
Bear hug, yeah.
And they're like, come with us. And I was just like, who are you? I'm coming, I guess. like within minutes of meeting everybody, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like in the family. It just did something to my life, you know, I'd never experienced that. I'd never experienced that before. And I probably will never get that kind of intimate experience again. And it's so good though. It was so good. It still is good. And anyway, so let's talk about, while I was there, y'all started dating, right? Were you guys dating?
Did you first start?
So this would have been 2014, 2015, 2016.
We had been dating. A few years at that time.
Yeah, and so what should Christian marriage look like? I didn't know you when you're married. I knew you when you're dating. Now, you guys can share the story better than me, but I remember there was a time where we were on again, off again, on again, off again.
How does right? he know that?
He was there.
I was there. It wasn't that big a room.
That's true. Yeah. See, I say you can't hide in the small churches. Yep. Yeah.
And it's interesting because I remind you that when you are off again with someone who you go to church with, and the church has 20 people, like it's a bit different of a relationship.
Yeah.
So walk me through y'all's sort of story.
So, oh man, I've been deferring to him for the whole. Okay.
Pull your microphone down a little bit. We can't see your face real good.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Uh oh.
Don't break it. It's expensive.
It's okay.
Is that okay?
Here, twist it like this. Twist the middle part up.
Uh huh.
Push that part up in the air. There
this
you go.
One?
Yep, and pull the microphone down.
Uh huh.
Can you help her out, Chris?
Like
push,
that?
Push down on this one.
Push down. on this.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Now like hold that. It. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job. Good job. Is that right. better, John?
Yeah, I can see your face a lot better now.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Can I move it?
Yes, you can move it backwards.
There we go.
Yep.
Okay. So, what now? Oh, on again, off again. So I think it was really, I don't know. So we went to high school together for our senior year, our last year at North Tech. And we were just friends, became best friends in the school. And then that year after we graduated, he was dating somebody and we did not see each other.
We don't talk about that.
Right. we were not interested in one another romantically really at all. And then once we graduated and I started working and he was like producing music and, we were spending a lot of time together, you know, at school. And then once summer school started and I wasn't working, and eventually we just started liking each other. He was, like I said, he started off as my best friend. And so that year, I think God had told me that he was my husband. And
early on in high school, yeah, huh?
Not in high school, but like
right after
high school. And I remember it was the first time I was audibly able to hear God's voice. Mm. And I remember that. And he's shaking. I don't know why he's shaking his head.
What a thing to hear God's voice.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, this is something that I had thought about for a long time.
Me?
I had always. Yeah. And when I told him, he was like, I don't know if you heard.
not. He gave you the shade. He
said,
you mean
yes.
Some other Chris Lachey?
Right. He was like, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, like literally that. And so, after
playing hard to get a little bit.
He was. After a while, a few years on and off, with a relationship, we never were like separated initially for more than like a week or two. And then the last time that we separated was I think in 2016, 2017, one of those. And we were not together for about a month or two, but also still kind of talking a little bit. And then eventually
crazy when you say
that. Why? I'm tracking what she's saying.
No, I'm just like reliving it.
Oh, I gotcha.
We just broke up because we were teenagers, and
what's something that would have caused a breakup?
I don't know. What's something that caused a breakup?
You know, we broke up one time on Valentine's Day.
Because you didn't want to buy a gift.
We did.
No, it was.
You're like, I ain't got no money for this Valentine, honey. I'll see you next year.
It was actually, if I remember correctly, I was in school at the time, and that was like the center of everything that I had going, you know, as a man trying to make it in the world and whatnot, build my economic value and whatnot. And it kind of dug away from our personal time together. And her upbringing was a little bit different than mine, where everybody was kind of on top of each other in like a intimate kind of way. Like physical, like intimate time spending together with family. When I actually started hanging around them, it was kind of like how you were.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, everybody's just in a bedroom. It's nine of us watching a movie. Like,
oh my!
Not nine.
And you're not a small guy. You are a tall man.
Yeah,
I've been
6'3" or 6'4".
So what happened on Valentine's Day? I need to remember.
I had communicated at the beginning of whatever semester.
Love it.
That, hey, I'm about to be working part time and going to school full time, and you know, if I have to spend time studying because I'm trying to build a life for myself, you know. Hopefully you can be a part of it, but I let her know, hey, I'm gonna have to, you know, prioritize some things. I gotta study, gotta spend time doing things. And we got into an argument on Valentine's Day about not spending enough time together. And yeah, ultimately we
you don't remember it.
I don't. I just remember.
Look at the forgiveness she shares in her heart. Yeah. on Valentine's Day.
I don't remember that.
So that's interesting. So I do remember that when God told me I was going to marry Megan, I tried to keep it a secret. So you told him pretty early on, huh?
I did. Almost immediately. Yeah. And he.
So, and it was also totally to Jamila's credit here, it was one of the first things I heard God say to me too. So I mean, look, I ain't even mad about it. I get it, man. God, sometimes God needs to get us focus in the wrong direction so that we don't look somewhere else. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
So for you guys,
they're rocking your shoe.
So who was driving the ship trying to keep this on track?
I don't know. I feel like it.
So when you're reconciling it, who's calling somebody first? Or do you sit next to each other at church? You're like, hey, I've seen you here before.
I think it was kind of alternating in nature.
So, to be honest, it was difficult for us to, like, stay away from one another. Mm. So, I don't know. We used to say that it was just weird not talking to one another. Weird not, you know, being in each other's vicinity. And it wasn't, like, some type of weird thing. It was just, like, a feeling that this person was supposed to remain in my life. Like, and that's kind of just how it felt. And so even like the last time that we broke up, I think the reason why it was so difficult for us and so hard for us to like not communicate with one another is because we genuinely wanted to make sure one another was okay, wanted to see, you know, how things were going. And it was like weird just not knowing what's going on in this person's life that I love, right? Yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of like how it was for me.
Yeah. I had a conversation recently with someone who had broken up with someone who they went to church with. They're like, oh, it's so hard to, you know, step away from that thing because I see him at church every week. And to also to deal with like the, you know, do I get back together with them or do I not get, so you guys have dealt with some of that. Like, was that those seasons, even though you're sort of joking about it now, like we're sort of joking about all the breakups and this and that, cause we know the end of the story, right? The end of the stories is a quality marriage here. And so what to me though, there's something to learn there from those, like, Chris, should you not been breaking up with her so much, or, you know, was there something, what was the lessons learned there through that?
Yeah. I feel like everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And sometimes that reason is immaturity. That's what I attribute a lot of it to. I think we learned eventually that we were trying to do too much too fast. But I mean, you know, what wisdom do you have to pace yourself when you're young? You know,
that is a quality statement. What wisdom do you have to pace yourself when you're young?
Yeah.
I'm going to tweet this out. I'm going to put this on the... This is going on the reel. What wisdom do you have to pace yourself when you're young? That is a quality thought.
You and I, we'll both post it.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like, what could you stop yourself from doing that your flesh didn't want to do when you were young? It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Whether it's, I want to go see this movie, I want to get this pair of shoes, I want to go to this restaurant, I want to get, you know, like, what patience do you have as a young person to wait for things, other than the fact that you can't get it? Like, so if you can't get a girl, you got to be patient. If you can't get a job, you can't get the shoes, you know?
Yeah.
Or less on giving credit, I guess. But you just like, so what do we tell a person who's dealing with it?
Wow.
if you're interacting with an immature, a person who's acting immature, right? They're not immature, but they're making, you know, like you were, like, they're making decisions that you now would look at and be like, I don't know. Like, what would you say to old Chris when he's in the middle of all that? Like, what would you say differently to him?
Myself.
Yeah.
From back then, I would say, okay, if I got too much information about me, too specific and accurate an answer, I would first and foremost tell myself, lighten up a little bit, learn to have greater levels of patience and compassion for the people around you. And this is not even just being specific to romantic relationships with my now beautiful wife, but in general, understand that relationships are valuable beyond what you can reap benefits. What you can give to a relationship will do more to bless you than what you will ever receive from one. It's important how you look at the time that you spend with someone. And I think if I could give my younger self the perspective of what the true value is of having another person that you love and that will love you in return, I've been able to avoid a lot of headaches. And I probably would have done things differently. But how else would I have learned without the mistakes?
Yeah.
So I would also tell my younger self, don't beat yourself up too much and make sure that you keep yourself in church.
Yeah.
Like, and not just church itself, but keep the church in you and your heart.
Yeah.
Continue to follow God regardless of a romantic relationship. And all things work together for the good of they that love the Lord and are called according to his purpose, including eventual marriages, romantic situations.
Yeah.
you know, things that seem broken from immaturity, God can mend a lot of things that you wouldn't think that he would.
That's quality advice. Both those things, you know, staying in church is a big one, because I think some people use church as like a way to find relationships, right? Like, mm-hmm. so that's where the girls are. That's where the boys are, you know, and just because a person goes to church don't mean you be with them mm-hmm. or that they're following Jesus. Right.
Right.
And so you've got that to contend with. But I think you said the other thing was like sort of like lighten up and don't, you know, like, so for me, like I put myself in that comment, right? So like, I talk a lot about vision and purpose and go get what God has for you and knock it down, and that's a brick wall and you run right through it. And you know, it's like, there's not a lot of gray in that, yeah. in that, to be like, hey, slow down, dummy. There's somebody there who you might want to go through the wall with, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and for you, it was like, hey, I'm going to school. I'm trying to work on me. Like it's almost selfish in a way. You're like, in your mind, you're like, I'm doing this for my family, my future family or whatever. But in another way, it's also like, I'm thinking about me in the moment, you know?
I think mm-hmm. you just said something right there. You're so focused on getting to the future you that nobody can get the version of you that they might need in the right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're so focused on, what was it, 2023 now? 2030 yeah. me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still guilty of this, still focused on trying to do things for, you know, my wife and trying to build a family and everything, and wanting to buy the big house and, you know, get nicer cars and life insurance, you know, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to do. And it's like, but she needs you today.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't just need the future version. You know, tomorrow's not promised.
Yeah.
You never know what could happen, you know, God forbid, but, you know, people don't always make it to their expected dates.
Mm-hmm. Time,
so
mm-hmm.
be grateful for the time that you have and make sure that you're giving what you can give in every season of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just focused on what you want for yourself, but what God is speaking right now.
That's good. When did you guys get married?
You want to say the date? Do you remember?
Oh, no. Don't test the wife.
April 14th, 2018.
Yeah, yeah, so you've been married 5 years this month.
Yeah.
You guys have an anniversary coming up in a week.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Friday.
Yeah, Friday. Yep.
Wow, five years.
Yeah.
Five happy years.
Yeah. Okay, so why are they happy?
They are happy because sometimes they're not.
Oh my God.
That's such a beat. Did you want to talk about that?
No, please. Go on. Talk about it.
We were actually talking about something earlier. I think the beautiful thing about marriage is it's like a science experiment, kind of. Like, you're going to get stuff wrong. Like, you're going to think you put a formula together that works.
Mm.
And it's going to blow up in your face.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
What do you do once you get to that point where things aren't great? Do you love this person enough to be able to move past this and work it out?
Yeah.
Do you love yourself? You love God, first and foremost,
mm-hmm.
to look in the mirror and say, okay, I was wrong. Okay. And to mm-hmm. be able to vocalize that to this person and let them know, more important than my pride and being right is being with you, because God has put us together. So let me not be the one that pulls us apart. So I think we find happiness because I'm not perfect at it, she's not perfect at it, but we try to be accountable and to fall towards one another.
Yeah.
And not apart.
Yeah, we do that a lot.
Yeah, we try.
And I only say that because, like, I don't think about it.
Yeah.
And how he just verbalized it. I'm not, you know, he's the talker. Between the two of he like intellectually he puts all the nice words together and does all the stuff right. I don't, and so I don't like cognitively, I don't think about that, but that's literally what we do. Mm-hmm. And not even, you know, it's not on purpose, it's just because that's what I promised to do, what I promised to God that I would do, and to my husband. And I don't know, I feel like it's just a natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once you make that choice and you make that decision that this is what's going to happen, and it's not just because I heard from God that this was my husband years ago or whatever have you, almost 10 years ago now, it's not because I heard that, but because I've made that choice
mm-hmm.
to stick this thing out. And then sometimes for me, making that choice just looks like, okay, in this specific situation, that's the choice that I'm going to make, and I'm just going to stick through it. And I don't like cognitively think about that, so I don't know. It's just sometimes he baffles me with like how he thinks about stuff, and I'm just like, okay, well, whatever. Yeah, that what he said.
Yeah. Well, I get that, but and also it's like, it's not often that we're like, doing some deep thinking about what our marriage is. It's like we're just walking it out, right? And so God may have told me to marry Megan, but he did not tell me how to manage that marriage. Right. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's in his word. There are things that we can follow and things we can do to follow God's word in terms of what a Christian marriage should look like. But it's walking that out is the faith part. Like, I've got to not say all the thoughts that are in my head. I've got to keep some of that to myself. I can't just walk around being a dictator in my own family, even if a wife may or may not be called to be submissive in the Bible. This is not a this is not a dictatorship. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a partnership. And there's a lot of lessons that I had to learn early on in my marriage where it's like, okay, I may have messed that one up and I've got to adjust. And so I'd say for me, and you guys can maybe share on this too, lessons you learned in your marriage. I think for me, maybe the best, and I don't know if I've ever verbalized it like this before, but compromise was at the top of my list of like, it's easy to, it's like, cause for me, I didn't have to do a ton of compromising. And so it wasn't a muscle that I was used to doing. Like, as an adult, I lived the life I wanted to, a life of the flesh. I was gambling, whatever. I had no one in my life to tell me no. I had no authority. I had no God. I had nothing. So, like, hearing someone say no to me was like, what do you mean no? You know, like, and then on the other side, it was like, when I got saved and God's got a plan for your life and I'm following it, and then I'm Megan, we're moving here. We're going to this church. We're doing this kind of thing. And it's like, I'm going whether or not you're, like, I had that sort of, like, come or don't, like, you know, early on in our marriage. And so, like, that's not compromising, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not conversation. That's, we weren't married at the time, but, you know, now we're married and I've got to learn to compromise. I got to say, baby, I would like to go to the spirit church, you know? and so what do you think about that? You know, you got it, everything gets framed differently, you know? It's not just like, hey, like, we had conversations like, hey, we want to have a lot of kids. Maybe we'll get a TV show like the Duggars. And now it's like, I think we're only gonna have 4 kids, and there's like, and then, and I'm not gonna tell you who. One person says, well, maybe more, and the other person says, no, we're not. And so, and it may not be who you think. So you've got these conversations that you're having with your wife and your spouse. So for me, it was compromise. What about for you guys? It was like, it was different than dating. This relationship is different now that you put rings on your fingers and you committed for life.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I gotta think about it. Go, husband, go.
So, the most important thing that I can think of that I've learned from marriage, right? Just want to make sure I got the question straight. That, what has God been teaching me through my marriage? I guess is a better question. I mean, obviously the cliche stuff, you know, patience and all those things. But I think.
Can you bring that mic closer to your mouth?
Sorry. Get the levels right.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I think the most important thing from this marriage that God has been teaching me and showing me up to this point, I'm sure it'll change as I get older. You know, you get one thing down and you realize there's 15 of them. I'm going to say forgiveness.
Yeah.
Say forgiveness because it's my go-to answer for relationships in general. Obviously, the Bible emphasizes, like, a lot how important forgiveness is, especially in the New Testament. We're talking about when you enter into prayer. I can't remember what scripture it is, but Jesus was telling the disciples, I believe when he was in Jerusalem, after the story of the fig tree. You familiar with it?
Yes. Go ahead, keep going.
So he's speaking and he's letting them know that, you know, when you enter into prayer, make sure that you're forgiving, because your Father in heaven will forgive you. And I think it's been fruitful for the marriage to make sure that I'm embracing a lifestyle to forgive. Because it's difficult to continue on and let something grow when you won't let old stuff die. You won't let old stuff pass.
That's a big one.
You know, keeping you from becoming who you're supposed to be. You know, holding on to habits from when I was 17.
Yeah.
I can't be the person I'm supposed to be at 30. Holding on to something that she said from, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, and I'm holding it over her head. How can I love you in the present way that I was kind of talking about before? How can I be the person that I'm supposed to be for you now if I'm stuck in the past? So forgiveness has been a vital part of my process, I guess our process, because, you know, we're one, in having a happy and successful marriage up to this point.
I feel like, were you going to say something, John?
No, I just realized, because somebody let us know in the chat that the microphones are having an issue, so I was trying to deal with the microphone issue.
Uh-oh.
It was not your fault.
I I think what changed for me from dating to marriage is putting away like singleness. And
that's a good one.
I say that because being a single woman or a single young lady at the time, because what was I like 23 when we got married?
Yes, when I was 24.
Putting away like the single woman and putting on being a married woman meant something totally different for me, mm-hmm. just because there was not a lot of married women in my vicinity. There's not a lot of married women in my family. And so understanding that I had been made new with Christ. And then here I am now, I have a new identity as a married woman right. of God. That was something that I needed to, I don't know. I think I'm still like seeking God and helping to understand what that married woman looks like and how that person communicates, what they talk about, who they talk to, you know, what kind of people that woman is around, who she seeks for guidance and wisdom and, you know, stuff like that. All the things that the Proverbs 31 mm-hmm, woman mm-hmm, is, mm-hmm. all the things, you know, that encompass the submissive wife or whatever have yeah. you. Just because I believe in the submissive wife, just putting it out there. Uh-huh. So just putting on that identity and understanding who God called me to be first and just living in that within our marriage is like what kind of changed for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the right before we decided to get married, maybe like a few months before, I had just accepted, like I said, we had been broken up, and I had just accepted, like, okay, God, well, I know you told me that this is my husband, but even if like I did something to mess it up, because we can do that.
Yeah, sure.
Even if I did something to mess it up, I still love him, but I'll love him as a brother in Christ. Mm-hmm. And I'll just be this woman that you call me to be in whatever, you know, happens from there. And so I had to take that into the marriage also. And so, I don't know, hopefully that makes sense, but that's just kind of what I had to change or, you know, focus on coming from being a single woman to a married woman.
Yeah, you had mentioned the thing that I wanted. Is you said, I believe in a submissive wife.
Mm-hmm.
And this means different coming from a woman than it does when I say it. So tell me what that means to you.
What do you mean?
I mean, because I feel like if I'm like, I want my wife to be submissive, that sounds a lot different coming out of my mouth than it says, I am a submissive wife. Like, there's just different things that are associated based on who's saying it and mm-hmm. how it's being said.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I believe the submissive wife, it's not like a dictatorship, like that my husband tells me everything that we're supposed to do, but I'm cooperative with the vision that God gives to my husband. I submit to the God that's in my husband, the Christ that's in him. And so if I have trust and I have faith that God leads my husband and that my husband keeps his heart and his ears spiritually open to what God has to say about the leading of our household, I'm not submitting to my husband. I'm submitting to God mm-hmm. and the leading that God does through my husband. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that makes sense. But I don't see it as like, when I say I'm a submissive wife, I'm submitted to the authority of God and of Christ, not to this.
Right, which is where people get it twisted.
Exactly.
Because they're like, you're just a trad wife. They're calling it on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok.
A
trad wife. Traditional wife.
Trad wife.
And so they're coming after the trad wives. You know, they're like, you know, these wives, what do you mean? They're staying home and cooking and doing all this stuff. And they're like,
listen, I will stay home. Okay. I will stay home.
Get me an apron.
Now, I'm going to work too. I'm going to do something part time, but I will stay home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, I appreciate the commentary because for me, I'm thinking like, cause my wife works, you know what I'm saying? And we've had conversations like, what would it look like if you stayed home and I went to work full time and this mm-hmm. sort of thing. And it's just not her, like she would do it. And I think she would probably have more kids if we did it, you know, that way. But she's also like-minded with you. It's like, she's following the authority of God, who just happens to place us above wives in the hierarchy of things. The Bible is very clear. This, you know, God, right. You know, men submit to God, women submit to husbands, children submit to mother and father. Like the kids are over the dogs are over the cheese over the crackers, crackers over the plates over the table, right? Like there's a hierarchy of the things that are submissive to God, but it's ultimately the ultimate authority that gives all of that down, right? And it comes down. Now, if you've got a godly man and he's seeking after the Lord, and you know he's seeking after the Lord, you see it yourself, you see him in the Word, you see him in prayer, you see him walking this out.
See the fruits of the Spirit.
Yeah. Then it becomes less of a dictatorship, right? Yeah. It becomes more of a, because that man is not going to go, here's what God's telling me, do it or else. Like that,
right? That's definitely not how he leads. Yeah, you know, that's how it works.
On this point, it's interesting because I think a piece of the puzzle that a lot of men fall short in this is they don't realize the importance of the role of the helpmeet in the wife.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our submission to God is understanding how to hear His voice through the woman.
Yeah.
Now a man isn't. We're commanded as husbands, right? Love your wives as Christ loved the church.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at what Christ did for the church, he was patient. Now, he did have sternness and directness in certain instances, but he was not condemning. Even when people got caught in their sin, when he saved the woman from the stoning, that he was without sin, cast the first stone. And his commandment unto her, after she said, you're not going to persecute me? He's like, no, just go and sin no more. He has that grace and that mercy. And as an extension of God's grace and mercy, it is to my benefit to be graceful in interactions and dealings with my wife, because God is going to speak to her too. And the way in which that I will lead and then she will submit will show reflections of what it actually is that's inside of my own heart. Typically what you give a woman in that kind of environment, whatever she nurtures and creates, is a reflection of ourselves. So the compass that you can see for God's voice in your life in a poetically beautiful kind of way is, if your wife is submitting to you, what does that make her life look like? Does she look miserable in submission to you as a husband, or does she become fruitful like the Proverbs woman is described? And that's what I believe as men and husbands that are following in the faith that we should aspire to have women that are building up homes, building up families, building us up for all the things that we're responsible for and that they're responsible for, you know, and respecting the fact that God is speaking to everyone.
That's
and
right.
In her submission, we're submitting, resubmitting to him through looking at her.
Kind the of, world will never understand that kind of language. The second they hear submit, it's they're out of it. And I love this about, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because you started doing these reels. I mean, these have blessed me in a way you will never know, because you started doing, and so describe sort of, so I'll describe and you tell me if I got it right. Okay. So you are, you're showing an insight into your family life through the eyes of you as a wife and your role as a wife in your Christian relationship, where you are showing, hey, look, ladies, it's okay if you make dinner for your husbands. Hey, ladies, look, it's okay if you have to work sometime. Hey, ladies, it's okay if you do the laundry or whatever the thing is that you're doing, right? It, it doesn't matter what the thing is. You're like, it's okay. Like, it's okay if my husband doesn't cook every meal. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, and there, and it's basically like, if this would have been 60 years ago, would have been like normal gender roles, but society has gone crazy in all these areas.
Right.
And so the idea that you cook for your husband is now seen as like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she's doing that. You know what I'm saying? And it's, it's such a wild idea that we've come this far. And so for you to make a video where that's what people did, and you're like, and you're bucking societal trends with just by making macaroni and cheese for Chris one night. It's crazy to me. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So is that about right? Is that accurate?
Essentially, yeah. I just, you're like the second person or one of the most recent people to say that. I'll say that, that it's something that's become kind of taboo within the culture of, you know, today's society, I suppose I should say. But it's something that I've always held in my heart that I wanted to do, that I never really like had done as much as I wanted, if that makes sense. So I don't know. I just wanted to start doing the videos because there's like all this stuff about this. I don't even know what it's called, but I'll say I've heard these words, the red pill society.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know. I don't know. And then like the feminists going against that red pill. I don't know. And I'm just like, bro, like it's not that serious. If you love this person, you serve this person. Mm-hmm. Like this is how, this is my service unto my husband. And I'm going to show you that it's not that bad. It's really not. As long as you have somebody, as long as your spouse is appreciative and you know, they all, appreciative. That's it. That's the word. As long as they appreciate what you're doing. And then even if they don't, you're doing unto God. Do it as you're doing unto God, just like everything else that you do in service. And I just wanted to, I guess, show that and kind of be a little controversial because also in society, women tend to put on this, like, of course, these are all the like peekaboo words, right? women tend to put on like this masculine thing. And I'm like, bro,
like they want to be like masculine, independent, entrepreneurial, and right, like boss babe and all this stuff. Yeah.
But it's like, dude, it's okay to
not want to be all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. And to also be a working woman, because I am a working woman, but I also want to take care of my household and I want to take care of my husband. So I feel like a lot of people could benefit from, a lot of women could benefit from changing like the outlook on the submissiveness and thinking like, oh, if I'm submissive, then they have a leg up over me and I'm just serving them and they're not serving me. Mm-hmm. No, it's quite the opposite. You're both serving one another, and it's just how that service is going is kind of what
it's interesting, because you saw what was happening in the culture via online videos and the things they were saying and their belief system, regardless of whether or not it was around marriage, but it's like there's opinions about a lot of different things and marriage is included in a lot of that things. And so for you, your response was like, oh, I'm going to make a video just showing how I do it. Yeah. Which, by the way, Christianity is what's the word you used? Anyway, it's in the same way, it's
controversial.
Yeah, yes. Controversial. Christianity is controversial
in the modern day.
Yes. And I think maybe always, but you know, the idea that there's a way you have to do it, you know, like that the world will tell you, do it how it feels good. Do whatever makes you happy. You know, you don't have to even be married.
What makes me
just
happy
live with
sitting
for,
on my couch, reading a book. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what.
Yes, that's something. You're like, do I want to get up and cook dinner? No.
No. Yes.
And that's real. That's real talk. That is real talk.
That's how I was for like the longest time. Yeah. Yes.
And so what was it like for you, Chris, when she starts getting a camera out? She's like, all right, because I do everyday reels, people know that about you know. So it's like, I like talking to somebody else who pulls the phone out and they're like, hey, I'm making a video today, what are you gonna be the star of the video or what?
No, honestly, I had been encouraging her because she had mentioned, I think for the past couple of years, that she wanted to get into some type of content creation, making videos, doing commentary and stuff like that. So I've kind of been waiting. Mm-hmm. And like, hey babe, when are you gonna do that? Because you know, I want to be not pushy, but like supportive. So whenever she would bring it up, that's when I would, you know, ventilate my thoughts. Like, hey, yeah, you should probably do that. You know, don't worry about all the things that, you know. That,
again, the role of a husband is what you're describing.
Yeah.
The role of a Christian husband is like encouragement.
Yeah.
You know, we're not dictators. We are just husbands.
I didn't wake up like at like 7 a.m. like, you got a video ready?
Like, yeah. Like, you put the timesheet on the wall. She's got to clock in and out. Like, look, it's editing time.
Yeah, just trying to be an encouraging voice because, you know, when in the world as it is today, who knows what she's going to encounter today when she's out, you know, work. She works at a bank. And you know how people come to the bank sometimes. It's
I don't work at the bank, so how do I come to the bank?
I'm sure you could describe it more, but I hear stories about, you know, just having to listen to people vent on the phone about a mistake someone made with the transaction that's could have been fixed by the time, you know, they got done complaining about it. Not her fault. She didn't do it. Mm-hmm. But she's got to listen. And it's like, I don't want to be one of those voices. Mm-hmm. Let me try and be one of the ones that's like, hey, that person, they're not upset at you.
Yeah.
It's whatever's going on in their life. Pray for that person. Yeah. And you come home, get this love.
Hey, it's what a good husband you got there, you know?
I know, right?
It sounds cliche, but it's a real thing because, and she does the same thing for me because, you know, who knows what's going to happen? It's this thing I used to say to her, I don't have to say it as much, thank God, anymore. It's like, it's not your job to play for the other team. Mm. Play for your team. Be positive. Think positive about yourself. You want to go apply for that job? Go do it. It's not your job to tell you.
Yeah.
Tell yourself that you're not going to get it. Let them tell you.
Yeah.
Were you, if they think so, they're lost.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So did you get comments and things on these videos you were posting?
I don't get a lot of comments.
I just started.
Yeah. Yeah, you just started it, and that's okay.
Yeah,
you
know? I started in December. Curious.
Yeah, because that is like the type of thing that gets the fervor of people going. You start, you say anything that somebody disagrees with, like that's where they come. That's where the commenters
I thought I would, but I haven't gotten any yet. I had one guy tell me, so I posted one video where it was I was doing something, but there was a voiceover of Pastor Michael Todd. And he, and he was saying, like, if the man that you're dating doesn't hear from God, then he won't know how to lead you, or something like that. Something like
basic.
I know, right? And so it said that he won't know how to handle you, or something like that. And so I posted that, and like that was one of the first things that I posted that got like so many likes. And I was just like, I'm not even doing nothing. Yeah. I'm not even saying nothing. Like, what? But it was a controversial thing, and a lot of people agreed with it. But also there were gentlemen that was like, so I gotta hear from God to date you. Well, you must be troublesome. And I was just like,
I love it.
What?
I love it. First of all, I'm not dating you.
Right. And I was just like, that's not what it is at all. Clearly this is not for you.
Yeah.
So I those are the kinds of things I would expect like that.
For that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't get a lot of them.
The world when you're doing something as a Christian the way that God asks us to do it, people are always going to have an issue with that. Whether it's you go to church on Sundays or I can't believe, like I remember someone telling me once I was brainwashed for following Jesus. I was like, everything that's happened in my life since Jesus showed up has been a net positive. You know, like there have been times I've been unhappy with things, but like overall, like this story got a lot better after he showed up. Like,
exactly. You
know, I haven't always driven the car I wanted to drive or done the things I wanted to do or been at the church I wanted to be there, whatever the story is. Like, God, she showed up and things are much better. I would take my worst. I've heard other people say this, but I take my worst day as a Christian versus my best day before he showed up.
Yeah.
There's no way, because, and so whether it's in marriage and dealing with there are hard days with your spouse. You know, there are hard conversations where you have to have whether, and it's not always about like vision stuff. It's not always like, hey, this is what I want us to do with our life. Sometimes it's like, you know, they're stressed out at work, but you're happy and they brought their mood home and all of a sudden,
dude,
you know,
he like, probably has to deal with that a lot.
Yeah. Like you were saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Lou.
Like you really said something about, you know, dealing with the ups and downs and, you know, people saying, you know, being a Christian, brainwashed and all that stuff. It's interesting. When you're in the world, the only thing that matters and the only thing people talk about today is happiness. Like happiness is the goal. Happiness is the destination that we're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And I fervently believe that this is a lie from the devil. Fervently. And I don't want anybody to misunderstand and think that I'm saying that you should not be happy or that you should be depressed. But if that's the metric by which we are looking at where our lives are, we're going to be lost every time. It's not a good compass, because you can be happy and be on your way to hell.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can be happy and be very unhealthy. You can have poor eating habits. Some people eating a lot of unhealthy food makes them happy. Some people, you know, smoking marijuana and shooting up makes them emotionally happy. It gets you a stimulant. But these things are detrimental to us in so many different ways that we can't see, because our metric is our happiness, which is based in flesh.
Mm-hmm.
It's an emotion. But every person that I see in the Bible, even Jesus, they had to put the flesh to bed. They had to die unto their flesh to understand that for good to happen in my life, for God's will to take place, and for me to be in the place that I'm literally the person who created me wants me to be, I have to subdue my desire for happiness and sacrifice myself and my own fleshly self-interest to get the things that actually matter. Like in marriage, especially, like if it was just all about happiness, I'd be happy if she just did everything that I said.
Yeah.
I would never grow as a person. I would be a monster.
Yeah.
If it was just all about my happiness. No, but sometimes it's like, I don't feel like getting up and she doesn't feel like getting up. But we need water. So somebody's got to go to the kitchen. And that's something small. But, you know, sometimes it's, we're getting into a disagreement. And oftentimes, because my personality type or whatever. I'm the person that has to stay calm and try and resolve things and keep things from getting too escalated. Doesn't make me happy, but it definitely benefits my life and my marriage. And if I'm going to trade my happiness for a better end, a better, healthier relationship, more self-control, a better version of myself, a more stable mind and focus, and all these things that I'm going to need 10 years from now that happiness won't help me get through,
mm-hmm.
that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make any day of the week. So, yeah, you said something, John.
All the good words, husband.
You said something, John.
Yeah, happiness, it's interesting. So I wrote about this a lot in God Has Sense for Your Life. So happiness, whether it comes to your marriage or happiness in general, is what you're saying is true. And mm-hmm. I wrote that, like, the culture just prescribes happiness as a way of life.
Yep.
But happiness ultimately is fleeting, you know. And I'm going
to... It goes.
It's... If you reach in your pocket and you found a 20 you didn't know was in there, boy, I'm happy. Look at my 20, right? Yeah. Yes. But 5 minutes later, if you get a phone call that says, hey, your grandma had a car accident, how's that $20 feeling?
Yeah.
That happiness that you had a minute ago is now gone, right? Yeah. It's gone. Now, exactly. The Bible describes that we should walk in joy,
mm-hmm.
right? Romans 15:30, we should overflow with hope and joy, right? And so joy, by definition, is the state of happiness. Like, your happiness never leaves. You are just always in happiness. Like, and so the world is sort of right. The school, mm-hmm. the world, you should do what makes you happy.
Mm-hmm.
But God says, if you find joy, which comes through my spirit, which comes through my son, it's a fruit of my spirit, mm-hmm. this joy, you will live in a state of happiness where you're happy if you got a 20. You're also not miserable when bad news arrives.
Yep.
You can handle and solve problems whenever that problem. So, and so some, what's it like to be in a state of happiness? Well, I imagine if I dropped you off in the middle of Missouri,
mm-hmm.
and I said, walk to Oklahoma, it would take you a long time to get to Oklahoma. You're in the state of Missouri, right? So if that was the state of happiness, it takes a while to get out of happiness,
mm-hmm.
when you've got, you know, things thrown at you in your life or your marriage or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So you're right. The world does prescribe happiness, but yep. it is wrong. But if you yeah. find joy.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know if Proverbs 31 says a joyful woman, but I know it says you find a quarrelsome woman and you got a bad thing. You know, so you got to avoid them quarrels.
Well, there's a lot in Proverbs 31.
I can't remember the exact verse. I'm butchering it, but yeah. Yeah. Better to be there than in a house with a quarrelsome woman.
Yeah, that's a different proverb, but it's in there.
It's in there.
Watch out for him.
Yep. John, what you just said on joy was so perfect. Oh my goodness, because I think I've experienced the fact that joy even runs deeper, because joy is of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that comes from the content of your flesh. It can only come from God, and it's true nature. You know, people use words to describe things falsely all the time, but by kingdom definition, joy being beyond emotion, I think it's expressed through our flesh and happiness, but what it truly amounts to in my life, and as I've seen it, it is like a force. If you watch Star Wars, it's like the force. It's, it's just there. You know, you can be in a time of mourning and be joyful. It's the craziest thing still to this day that I think about. I'm like, wait a minute, what? My whole childhood grew up thinking joy was happiness, but it's actually a content of strength that supersedes emotional state.
Yeah.
It keeps you in that place where it's like, okay, God, regardless of how slow I'm moving or how heavy mm-hmm. this weight is, I'm going forward in the direction that you told me to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to understand and trust and believe that forward is the way that you want me to go and not backward. And it is the thing that is in him and of him that gets us there. And the fact that it has nothing to do with ourselves, I think, is what makes it the perfect thing.
Yeah.
Because if it came from me, it'd be fleeting, like happiness. It'd be temporary. But because it's of God, it's eternal.
Yeah.
It doesn't run out.
So good.
So beautiful.
Yeah, man.
You said something, John.
Yeah. Hey, you pick up the book. So final thoughts for people who are considering marriage. Now you've got 5 years under your belt. Mm-hmm. What is the, you know, the advice you give to 2018 Lachey's before, you know, that premarital counseling? You're gonna have one session with them. You know, like here are some things I would do differently or that have worked for me. What do you guys, you know? Don't share fries.
No, he's going to share those fries.
That's the goal. Make enough money to buy separate fries.
Oh, my Lord. I'm going to go back to singleness because I believe a lot of people going into marriage want to keep a part of their singleness. And there's one thing, individuality and singleness are like two different things. Mm-hmm. And so being an individual in a marriage and operating in singleness are two, like, they're like night and day. I know who I am as a woman, as Jamila. But I don't operate as, oh, I'm just this woman and I can just do what I want. And then maybe I'll tell my husband. And I feel like that is detrimental to marriage. That's detrimental to your household. And so the Bible says, I don't know exactly how it says it, you know, verbatim. So I'm paraphrasing.
It's okay.
But it says a wise woman builds her house and a foolish woman tears it down, something to the likes of that. And so I believe that a wise woman finds a way to kind of nurture her marriage, nurture her relationship, and be the woman that God calls her to be in that, in the marriage, and not outside as that woman. So that's,
I've seen a lot of commentary on, and I think all this has to, like, the short clip society we live in now and all these different apps, right? You hear these 1 second thoughts from people, you know, and a lot of the thoughts, like, because we become so polarized on so many things, right? And marriage and relationships is one of the big ones that people are getting polarized on. And what I've seen recently is this trend where women want to have their own house and their own money and their own things, and they want a guy who makes six figures, but they want to work, or they want it's a complete shift from a traditional family substance. Like they want, and have you heard of this guy Kevin Samuels?
Yeah,
you know we have.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I just learned about him. Okay. So, oh, yeah. Yeah. So he's not in my circle of. I hadn't heard a lot. Yeah. Like, somebody was like, that guy died a couple. I was like, oh, yeah. I just saw him on YouTube or whatever. You know. Like, yeah. And so I watched some of these conversations that he's having with young, mostly African American women,
yep.
Where he's like asking them questions like, rate yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you want to work if you you know, if you're to get married, do you want to have a job, and yep. How much do you want your man to make and all this stuff? And then he comes back at them and says, well, do you know the average African American man only makes $45,000 a year? Do you know yep. that, you know? And yeah. And he just shares facts with yep. you know, and they're like, well, he's like, well, do you have any kids? And they're like, yeah, I have two kids. Well, he's like, do you know it's you know, exponentially yep. harder for you to find a man of that quality that you're looking for if you have kids from other relationships? Yep. And all these different things get brought up, and I was like, I've never thought about it. and it was so, and so if you guys have seen some of that, do you agree with some of that philosophy? I mean, not everything Kevin Samuels,
yeah, of course, yeah.
He's not a Christian guy, or yeah. you know, and he hears a lot of curse words and
he
all that
claimed
stuff.
To be, but yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And so, but it was the first time I had heard some of those, that thought,
mm-hmm.
that the listen, women, like, slow down, think about what you want, mm-hmm. and how.
No, there's merit there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's yeah. merit there. And a lot of women get upset about how he talks to women. Mm-hmm. But, like,
he wasn't very nice.
That he's a man. He's a man.
He was very direct.
He's going to be direct with you. And you're calling his show. He made that very clear. You're calling his show. There's mm-hmm. no reason for him to coddle and sugarcoat mm-hmm. stuff, mm-hmm. right? These are things that men want. This is, like, your situation. This is what you're coming up against. These are the facts. Like, there's nothing that he's not trying to come mm-hmm. against you. That's just the life that you have before you, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I agree with a lot of things that he said.
Like, not only did I agree with some, it's the first time I'd ever heard some of these thoughts.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like he's talking to, and this happened many times, so I can use this as sort of a generality, mm-hmm. right? He'd be like, well, how do you rank yourself
yep.
on like a scale of like 1 to 10, and 10's like Beyonce or whatever, mm-hmm. and like everybody's like, I'm an 8, I'm a 9, I'm a, yep. and they're like, he's like, well, how much do you weigh? You know, and yep. he's like, well, your BMI is actually obese or whatever,
right.
and you really think that you're still, you know, and
right.
and just, and he would just like say these things back to them,
mm-hmm.
to like try to get them to recognize mm-hmm. that maybe their scale, the worldly scale,
mm-hmm. yeah.
in God's scale, you can, you know, you can be yeah. Beyonce to whoever you're going to marry, you know what
yeah.
I'm saying? But
yeah.
it is different than maybe you're projecting yourself when you look in the mirror. And
right.
I watched woman after woman, at least that was on his show,
mm-hmm.
have this thought that like, no, you're wrong. Like I am Beyonce. Mm-hmm. I deserve a man who makes $2 million, even though the average man doesn't make nearly that. And if right. he does,
maybe in their whole life.
Yeah. And, yeah. And the thing is like, doctors don't make that much. And you want to wait till you're 30 because you want to have your cake and eat it too. You want to live a life where you're going to party and hang out and do all this.
Yep.
And then you want to meet a guy who's a doctor and will buy you the big house when you're 30 years old.
Yep.
And they're all like, yeah, that's what I want.
No.
And he's like, that's never coming, honey. And never.
Right.
And I was like, it's never coming? Like I know it wasn't coming. Like, I was like, because if I would have just heard them without his sort of questions to them, mm-hmm. I would have thought, well, that's reasonable. They want to have their own job. They want to have a life before their husband shows up. But then you start putting the facts on the table.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Maybe y'all need to rethink what you're doing. Yeah,
exactly.
Statistics are interesting like that. When you hear them for the first time, you hear a stat and it's like, wait, how many people?
Yeah.
Only what percent of men make, not just black men, not just Asian, white,
yeah,
across the board. I think it's less than 10% in this country make over six figures.
Yeah.
Every woman.
Yeah.
It's seems fighting on the internet wants, so 100% of the women fighting for 10% of the men.
Yeah.
And then he gets into, and you guys don't want to share them, but you want all of them. And it's like, not that I'm pushing for that, but it's interesting to see those comments come back where it's like, you're pushing against the numbers. It's not even like he's expressing anything that's like, he just mm-hmm. made it up. He's like, I'm giving you the numbers based on what you say you want.
Yeah.
This is your probability. And they'll still say, hey, I'm gonna play the lottery on this one.
Yeah. It's like, and, right. and that's what it felt like to me. It felt like a lot of women had a lottery mindset in terms of the men that they were wanting to be their mm-hmm. their spouse. And I think that when we look at biblical marriage, God, nowhere in the Bible does it describe wait for Boaz.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There is a story of Ruth and Boaz.
Yep.
You know, there is one story
yep.
where you can say, hey, look, she was poor.
Mm-hmm.
He waited and he showed up and he moved mountains to get her. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
But she brought value.
He went through a lot.
Yeah. to get that woman. Yeah. He went through a lot and there was a whole thing, you know, and Jerusalem rules and there had to be you had to be part of the family. There was a whole thing, you know, but, but ultimately the Bible is not specific on the type. I mean, it describes what a virtuous woman is, mm-hmm. right? And a virtuous woman is not described as someone who waits until they're 30 and they've had kids with other people to find mm-hmm. the spouse that they meet. You know, like the world has a different definition of what marriage should look like
absolutely.
Than what a virtuous, biblical, submissive marriage looks like. And it's
divorce rates are high.
High.
Preach that word, would you?
Divorce rates are too
people
high.
Are looking for happiness.
Yeah.
And to do what they want in the happiness. Marriage.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing about divorce statistics that I learned
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, most people will say, oh, how many percentage of people get divorced? 50%? Mm-hmm. Like, on average, people will say, you know, like half of marriages end in divorce.
Yep.
But it's not entirely true if you look at the statistics because the amount of people that get divorced gets exponentially bigger. So let's say you've got, out of 100% of Americans, first people, like your first marriages,
first one,
35% of those are ending in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
If you get married twice, now we're talking, you're 60% likely to get divorced.
Wow.
You have a third marriage, you're like 75% or higher, and you have almost a 90% chance of getting divorced if you are married for the fourth time. And so those divorces that are happening the second time, the third mm-hmm. time, the fourth time, the fifth time,
are lumped in.
They're lumped in with the people who are getting married for the first time.
Wow.
And so everybody's like, marriage doesn't work. No, it doesn't work for some.
Yeah.
They keep doing it over and over and over and over and over again. And they're like, the problem must not be me.
Well, and to add to that, our generation get divorced a lot too because...
Yeah. Or don't get married.
Right. So that's lumped in there too, I feel like.
The living together thing, man. Do you guys feel like it's different? Like living together versus being married together? Like, I feel like it was...
Well, I don't know. We didn't move together until we got married.
Yeah, we didn't live together until we were married. Thank
you. I had a relationship where I lived with a female prior to getting born again, prior to Megan,
mm-hmm.
and we were not married. Life is different on this side of the aisle. There's so much because it went from being sex and like having a roommate who mm-hmm. you have sex with to like having a person who you're sharing your life with.
Right.
You know, it is different. It's just different. It's we're making decisions that impact not just ourselves but like the lives of other people.
Yeah.
And you know, trying to make decisions that, for the most part, benefit God's kingdom if we're in His word. You know what I'm saying? And whereas when God's in this thing, and I, and again, I don't want to like judge people, but I'm just like,
no.
You shacking up, folks. What, like, what's this shacking up? You know, you going to church on Sunday shacking up? Like, I love you. God can forgive you sins of sin, you know, and we can talk about that being, I'm not going to love you any less or not stop inviting you to church or whatever, but it's like, what's the benefit? People think the benefit, I guess, is that you're trying out the cow before you buy the milk or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that?
Which is silly because I think the statistics are in on that too. That divorce rates are higher living with someone before you get married than if you're not. I think there's something attributed, obviously, I mean, everything that's done in spirit manifests in flesh. I believe that if you store up treasure in heaven, that you'll reap it. There's something about honoring God's word and not diminishing, you know, anyone who was living with someone and, you know, maybe even had kids out of wedlock and got married. I hope that your marriage is prosperous. I hope all marriages are, you know, prosperous and acknowledging God. But it's different just from lived experience versus witness experience, seeing what happens in certain dynamics, because you start to build a foundation and then try and shift the purpose, and that spiritually and in the natural, you've sown seeds under one type of covenant that, not saying that people are demonic, but it's the way that the devil would have it be, the way that the world would have it to be. Then you attempt to shift it to what God would have it to be, but you're in the same place.
Yeah.
Foundation's already been set.
Yeah.
And if it's on sand, you can't build a house there.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone was in that kind of situation, you know, not just trying to offer criticism without, you know, recommendation.
Sure.
form a healthy relationship with God. That's the key to a good marriage, a good relationship. If you honor God in His covenant first, because that's what it is. We're not just marrying Jamila to Chris or, you know, us holy matrimony, jumping the room at the altar. It is me standing before God, taking covenant that I will give myself as Christ gave Himself to the church, to this woman, as a reflection of that. That's what it's supposed to be. This is, in a form, evangelism, by me setting example. When people see my household, they should see the church. They should see righteousness. They should see God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, together functioning in order and in decency, with submission being the order of the day. That's what it should be. And marriage is servitude. It's not about happiness. It's not about couple goals. It's not about posting on Instagram. All this stuff is great. We're going to Cancun for her birthday. You know, it's going to be great. But God's going before me. He's going to make sure that everything is as it's supposed to be. If my focus is there, then I store up seed in heaven. I store up eternally where things are supposed to be. I'm not basing it on man, fleeting happiness and things of that nature that don't care one way or the other what my destiny is. But God has a plan for my life.
Yeah.
Plans to prosper me and not to harm me. So
that's a better way than I could have said it. Come on, somebody. He's got some smart words. You know what I'm saying? You said that already tonight. My man, you said that you got ordained recently.
I got licensed.
Licensed, yeah.
They told me that my pastor, my mom, says, you probably won't be licensed long before you're ordained. I'm like, okay, well.
Yeah, I can tell, and don't take this the wrong way, but I can tell a growth since I seen you.
I hope so.
Yeah, like I don't know what you're doing different, but man, God has shown up in your heart in a way that you're able to express God's word differently than I remember you being able to express it. You know, share the wisdom that God has placed in your heart as you sought after Him as an adult. You know what I'm saying? And like. Yes, It's legitimately come out in this conversation, and you know, I was going to tell you off the air, but I felt like, man, like you're doing, like,
glory to God.
Come on, somebody.
Right?
You know what I'm saying? It's all right.
If I could reach somebody through this podcast, I would love to.
If
you don't know Jesus, I mean, no better time than the present.
You're right about that.
I don't know how many more days, John. I don't know.
I don't either.
You know what I mean?
And so if you're shacked up, get married first. Right?
Seek premarital counseling.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Premarital. So we've been talking for a long time, but I want to talk about this. So did you guys go through it?
No.
Not officially. Yeah. My dad is a pastor.
Yeah.
He's counseled us many times.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting story to tell. So we decided to get married a couple of weeks before it actually happened. Like, we were planning a wedding and like had booked a venue already, and we were just like, okay, let's just go ahead and get married and stuff. And moved into my parents' basement 2 weeks before the actual wedding happened. And
I didn't move in there wasn't before the wedding happened.
No, we decided to get married a couple weeks. Oh, we were in Branson. Okay. I proposed.
I'm like, hold on, that's the party. Don't be saying stuff like that.
No, we were on a church trip.
I don't know. You proposed on the church trip?
Yeah.
He did, yeah.
In a stairwell overlooking the beautiful trees in Branson. It was nice.
Oh, yeah. Was it nice?
Yeah.
We got to get confirmation from
the
wife on that
that's
one.
That's the opinion. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. God speaks through her. God will tell me. That's right. Nice.
That's right.
But 2 weeks later, we came back home and we were married. Mm-hmm. And we had a small ceremony, 12 people, including us in total in attendance. And it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was the way that it was supposed to happen. And I have still promised her that we're going to have a ceremony on the vow renewal to make it big and boisterous. And
let's do it. And I'm there.
Yeah, definitely.
Send me the
yeah.
invite.
Yeah, most definitely. But I think that was something that still kind of bears weight in our lives, because there was no room for anything except we're doing this to honor God, yeah. to take kind of covenant. We didn't have time to think about what color the flower's going to be, what colors, and no shade to anybody that's, you know, got that going on. But anyway,
so what was the rush for? Much. So, I mean, if I'm listening to this, I'm like, why was so fast?
Essentially we were trying to avoid, being sinful.
No, hey, that's real talk.
Yeah.
That's real talk.
Yeah, it is real talk. And the Bible says better to marry than to burn. And we were like, we're already planning to, why not? You know, we already got, I'm working, you're working, we're grown, we got cars, we got
And so stuff. We had that conversation with our leadership, mm-hmm. and we wanted to, you know, be honest and tell them like, hey, this is what's going on, yep. and this is where Don't we believe like God anymore. Is
That's real
us.
Talk. And that so, is real talk. Because people are going through that.
Yeah.
Christians are going through that. You know, when I was dating Megan, you know, we had a quick marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, we dated for 12 months. I proposed, and 3 months later, we were married, and that's 15 months. And mm-hmm. so, like, if we had to wait, because you hear people, and they're like, all right, so we got engaged, and we set the wedding for 4 years from now. And I'm like, 4 years?
Right.
What? Y'all must be together already. Yeah. Because, ain't nobody waiting 4 years. For the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. Yeah.
On that point, though, John, it's important once you are married to make sure that the intimacy, and obviously sexually is what I'm talking about, but on all levels, there's anything valuable. Intimacy is so important mm-hmm. in marriage. I know men are, you know, raised up, and it's a little bit different now, improved in certain ways. The stereotypical male is, you know, bravado and don't show emotions and stuff like that. You're going to have to show some emotion. Mm-hmm. Even Jesus cried, okay? Mm-hmm. And if we're supposed to love our wives as Christ loved the church, I think he's a good example. Like, express, talk about it. Yeah. Open up. Be vulnerable. It doesn't mean that you're weak. Mm. And I'm not saying that you should be afraid to even be weak in certain instances, because nobody's strong all the time.
Yeah.
But for a fruitful marriage to exist, because I've lived it out for 5 years, not forever, but a long enough time to see, okay, God, if you open me up to this woman who's entered into the same covenant as me, where's the danger? Because she submitted to me as I'm submitted to you. And we're one, if I'm opening up to myself as things are supposed to be. Now, obviously there's a lot of prerequisites there within the kingdom, but there's safety within the covenant. So I encourage men, if you're married, you're not being vulnerable.
Yeah.
See counseling.
Yeah.
That's what we did too. Yeah. We go to
afterwards.
Yeah.
So you didn't have the premier, even though you had counseling from mm-hmm. your,
throughout like years and years of stuff. But, like we had a conversation and stuff, but it wasn't like a formal period, but mm-hmm. we could counsel it all the time. Like we're constantly around our pastor.
Premarital counseling helped us bring out the questions of like, where do you see yourself down the road? You know, and having questions like, how many kids do you both want to have? Like, those are not necessarily questions we had to ask ourselves yet. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them we had, some of them we hadn't, you know. And it just gives you a roadmap to be on the, because unity is so important in a marriage. It is, look, if you don't know where you're going to go to eat tonight, it can cause quarrel in your, you know what I'm saying? Like, and so imagine if you guys are on different pages about where you're going to live or how often you're going to go see the in-laws or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever the big stuff is, like how many kids we having or not having, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
I wanted to say something. I feel like I should say something on the point of us being intimate before marriage. And, in that, if that is something that somebody's dealing with, mm-hmm. I want to encourage them to, seek God. Because that is something that we wanted to abstain from. And, you know, flesh is weak, you know, sin is, it's something that everybody deals with. And yeah, so true. In whatever fashion that it would be in, but if that's something that you deal with and you want to honor God in that, I would sincerely suggest reaching out to leadership. And if you already have somebody that, if that person is someone that you are engaged to, or, you know, considering marrying or something like that, seek leadership counseling, discuss how to move forward into that, because I believe that's something that a lot of people deal with that in the church that we do not talk about
at all.
And so that scripture that we some people use it just to like get married and just have sex, right? But there was like a covenant. There was, we were already engaged. We already knew that, you know, we were going to be for one another. And so I feel like people should definitely seek to go into that marriage with, you know, under the leadership of pastors and, yeah, you know, counseling and things like that. I definitely think that's something that more people should consider without the big hype, because at the end of the day, it's just you and that person and God.
Mm-hmm.
So
100%.
Yeah.
I believe all that. I want to ask this question.
Mm-hmm.
You guys dated long before you were in covenant to get married, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the desires were still there back there.
Whole time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Time. So like, what was different in that season to keep you guys, you know?
Sheesh. I think it was a few things. I mean, above all, if you got to have your own relationship with God. You have to have it. Like, and I'm talking about the God, the Father, with Jesus, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have place in your heart for God to move.
Yeah.
Everybody is always going to deal with some kind of sin, regardless of whether it's, you know, sexual, or it could be, you know, addictions to different kinds of things. You know, there's all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But above all else, you have to have a real relationship. You really have to have a desire for God's will to be evident in your life. And yeah, you have to be willing to submit to His will.
Yeah.
When you hear God's voice, you have to be willing to obey. And some might call that simply spiritual maturity. So I would attribute the difference to growing spiritually and maturing in that way and saying, okay.
Can I throw your thing back as you said earlier?
Yeah.
What wisdom can be gained from in your youth not being, well, I forget how you said it. I already lost my tweet from earlier, but.
It's on the recording.
Yeah, it's on the recording. You had mentioned that being young, it's hard to do wise things.
Mm-hmm.
In abstaining from sex at a young age, or any sort of activity, mm-hmm, for that matter, is very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, long before, yeah, you decide that this might be the person I married, and then you end up getting married sooner to try and avoid it. You know, yeah, what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so what is the person who just started dating 2 months ago? What hope can we give them? You know, yeah, we got to set boundaries. I would start with there. You know, yeah, boundaries are very important. Yeah.
If I've learned that, I've seen a lot of people talk about the boundaries that they set and set accountability partners and stuff like that. And so I don't remember who it was, but somebody said that they would tell their friend when they were going over to somebody's house and let other people within the congregation know that they were wanting to do this thing, and mm-hmm, to have people reaching out to them and kind of bear one another's burdens, like the word teaches us to do, right? And so I feel like that's one part of it. And then also making sure that you're not over somebody's house late at night, mm-hmm, making sure you're not allowing yourself, if nobody else is in the house, maybe it's time for you to leave too.
Yeah.
You know, it gets comfortable because you want to spend time with this person and you want to hang out with them, but that's not necessarily the best thing for your spiritual growth, mm-hmm, for your relationship with God and for your soul salvation, right? That's not the best thing for you to, mm-hmm, do. Yeah, it's comfortable and it makes you happy to be here right now, but
not Netflix probably, and sin.
Right, right, right. So you probably want to go home, maybe we watch this at two different places, just on FaceTime or something, oh, you, yeah, know?
Yeah, I think what she just said is true. I do want to point out, just how bombarding this culture is with sexuality. We are a hyper-sexualized society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And any kind of reservation is condemned from engaging or even
so
encouraging.
Much. You're right.
It's,
yeah,
like, wait, man, I just don't want to see
the fact that the term body count is a thing It says volumes, right?
Yeah.
Right? It does. It's something. Yeah, a whole other discussion to have, but I would encourage anyone that is trying to abstain and is also trying to become romantically involved in any kind of way, date somebody. If you're pursuing God, you're going to have to be counter-American culture.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to try and pursue righteousness in a young relationship unmarried, you're just going to have to understand that that's just not for you. Spend time with the person in public. That's the easiest way.
Yeah.
Meet somewhere. If you're picking them up, you know, drop them off. It's just, you know, things that sound corny and that
they're
don't
so
sound
simple.
Good.
Do you know that the first date I went on with Megan was a group date?
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And so,
well, group dates are nice.
So we're saying all this stuff now with hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to date Megan, I'm fresh out the world.
Oh, yeah.
I asked her to go on a date with me. And she's like, well, come to church with me. All right. And so I was like, all right. So I show up at her church. She doesn't even sit by me.
Nice. That's great.
She sits on the other side of the auditorium next to her parents. I'm sitting next to, I'm like, who's this dude? You know? And so afterwards, I'm like, I'd already asked her on a date. We were supposed to go to the park.
Mm-hmm.
Open public space, right?
Yep.
And so I walk over to her. I was like, hey. In my mind, I'm thinking, why the heck didn't you sit by me? You know, like, well, there was no communication. She just walked over there.
Yep. Yeah.
She waved and walked. And I was like, oh, this is a thing. And so I walk up to her after church. I'm like, all right, are you ready to go? And she goes, yeah, hold on. And she goes away for like 5 minutes. And then she brings like 7 people back with her. And she's like, yeah, we're going. I was like, what do you mean we? This was, I did not sign up for this. We didn't talk about it in advance. There was no previous discussion. She was like, yeah, well, if I go, I'm going to take people with it. She tells me later that she just went over to her group and was like, y'all want to come to lunch with me so I don't have to go with this guy by myself. Like, she was nervous. Yeah, that's fine. But also it was like, that's how the first few went. Like, yeah. And I had never experienced a group date, a courtship, you know, this type of, we didn't kiss for a long time. Like, it was like, it was new to me as a fresh out the world.
Right, newly saved.
Yeah, and I hadn't learned any lessons. I hadn't listened to any podcasts where they're telling me set boundaries and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure this out as I go. Now I can say, this is what I did wrong. This is what I did, you know, this is what I would have changed a little bit. But for me, it was so, it was unnatural. It was so uncomfortable to do it the way that maybe God prescribes. Now, God, there's no written Bible verse about courtship or how long you should date someone or any. So, like, to say it's biblical is
right.
But God does want us to, you know, keep our morals, and He wants us to, you know, He wants the women especially to stay virtuous and men too. Mm-hmm. But you know, so you've got to set those boundaries up, so because we all know that this is real. And also, what people, it's like, so if I was trying to explain God to an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk to us blue in the face and they would be like, God, stupid.
Yep.
You know, this is something I like to say is similar to that. Mm-hmm. Is when I try to explain to a person who's never been married or hasn't been in a long-term relationship or is trying to wait till marriage to have sex, like,
mm-hmm.
that cloud that you're in of wanting to like make out all the time and get them in the room and heavy petting and all that stuff, mm-hmm. that cloud floats away after about 18 months, 2 years, all of a sudden, like, yes, sex is still a part of your life, but it's the priority. It is number one priority when you're dating or when you're trying to get married. It is at the top of the list. We want to get to that mountain.
It's a temptation. Yeah. It's sand temptation.
And all the other stuff is way down here. And then over time it shifts, right? Yeah. So like family and all this other stuff. So sex is still on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And a good marriage should be on the table quite frequently, in my opinion. Yeah. But it is not the priority anymore.
No.
And it's very hard to explain that to someone who's like never not been horny, you know what I'm saying? Like, never had to like be like, I'm tired, honey, you know what I'm saying? Like, never had to have those kind of talks with someone, you know?
Exactly. And those talks are real.
They're like, what, that's not up there?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I think that's why it's important to have intimacy with someone that you're married to and someone that you're looking to get married to beyond sexual. And for guys, it's kind of, you know, speaking Chinese at first.
But, well, especially, maybe, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, after a while, you kind of start to realize, and I thank God for kind of revealing it to me, that having an attraction to someone beyond the physicality, like something that just seems so simple. She genuinely cares for me. She cares if I eat today.
Mm-hmm,
she cares if I'm feeling okay. If I'm sick, she's like, sit down, let me get you, you know, some Robitussin and da 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 da. Like,
pour some Tussin on it.
Yeah, some Tussin. Yeah, she's gonna make me some tea. You know, she's cooking dinner. You know, she's taking care of things and making sure that I'm feeling okay. Like, I'm running a recording studio at the house. She's an employee of the business web. She's like coming in whenever she waits and hears for a break and a take. And she's like, did you guys need some water? You need anything? You guys hungry? You need, babe, gonna run the store. You want, she's doing all of those things. And that is genuinely an attractive thing in someone. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it's something that you kind of have to find by finding someone with good character. But it's difficult kind of when you're young to even be attracted to good character, because it's just everything's so visual, mm-hmm. you know, for boys and teenagers and puberty is like at its pinnacle.
Yeah.
All kinds of crazy things going on. But I would encourage wise counsel, obviously. Having good parents helps yeah. quite a bit, you know, having a good
Your parents aren't always wrong about this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I was 30 before I realized my parents actually had a good opinion about things. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, I just thought they were wrong the whole time. I was yep. like, well, turns out I was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that crazy kind of thing. But yeah, definitely having that intimacy
yeah.
of character.
Yeah.
And someone that you're like, I'm not just going to, you know, try and get an issue off and then lose interest, but someone that's like, I can see myself being with this person long term. Even if I'm not thinking 50 years down the road, but I'm just like, at least for the next 10, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But someone that I'm willing to go through the difficult times with, and that's going to make sure that I'm okay.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to do the same thing for them. Just the small stuff.
Yeah.
That's what gets me through the day to day when things don't seem fun.
Yeah.
And then eventually they are fun again, you yep. know?
The ebbs and flows of marriage. It's real. Yeah.
It's real. Real thing.
Well, thank you guys for joining me on the show tonight, man. We've talked for a long time.
Thank yeah. you for having us, so, John. I'm sorry.
This has been, oh, it's good. This has been a blast. I love you guys so much. I could have talked for another hour and a half, but it's bedtime.
Yeah.
And so we got to move on. But I want to thank everybody for who's tuned in tonight. And, man, thank you for watching. This has been so good. Thank Yay. You so much for sharing your
thank
thoughts
you.
And
thank
your stories
love to
with
come
us.
Back sometime.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. I'm never at a loss for the people sitting in this chair. I got a million things to talk about. In fact, we had stories I was going to tell you that we didn't get time to get
yeah,
to. So
oh, yeah. Right,
yeah.
Right, right.
So there's always a future podcast between us in the future. So thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
And everybody's watching. We appreciate you. Don't forget to like, subscribe, do all that stuff. And until next time, we pray you discover a future and a hope for your life today.